Canada. For Rheem hot water heaters, solar, continuous flow and storage hot water, Rheem is Australia's favourite. Install a Rheem.
Welcome to the Sunday Rub. Triple M rocks football.
I've been a little off my guard today, Swatter. I've had a... I don't want to mention it.
Unbridled. We had a diplomatic situation on a plane, but I'm going to park that.
What happened?
Tell me something I don't know.
You're not going to mention that on air.
Well, there was a blow up on the plane.
I'm duty bound, Brian.
Well, don't use those words. You locked up. There was a disagreement, let's say.
Strong, no. More about that later on.
I appreciate it if you didn't go ahead with that, Swatter. we are talking bombers, and Swatter, you particularly wanted to have a look at the Essendon list, and yes, they had a win over the weekend, and that was good and well done, and they did it really nicely. But where do you think their list should go? And they've got a lot of ageing players that they've recruited into the club.
Yeah, I just felt that yesterday, Treaders, it was almost by accident that they had a significant number of players out and they were forced to play a lot of kids. They had 12 players that had played 40 or less games. So a lot of inexperience, and they had 10 of their best 22 out. So obviously some of those 10 that were out will come back in. But I actually think, Jay-Z, that yesterday's result, it was a 9-point win against Melbourne. In the scheme of things, it's not massive, but it was significant. Because for me, if I'm an Essendon supporter, that's my blueprint moving beyond this year.
With the youth.
Absolutely. We need to get games into as many of those kids as quickly as possible.
Well, because of their current position.
Because of their current position. But also, they went and topped up. They went and got Adam Cooney. They went and got Paul Chapman. They went and got Brendan Goddard, who I might add, he's probably their best player at the moment, BJ. But the intentions were good, but with all due respect to some of those players, it's not going to be those players that will be part of the next 12, 24 months development improvement for the Bombers.
So let's name names. Who are we thinking could hang up a bit? Do you give Chappie another year?
I think that the end is nigh for Chappie, and Chappie may not want to accept that decision, but I think the club has got to make some tough calls. So Chappie would be one that I'd be sitting down having a conversation. I'm about to shoot Bambi here, but I think Fletcher's had an unbelievable career. But Fletch is not going to help the club move forward in 2016 either.
But you just can't get rid of all of these players at once.
No, but I've only talked about two.
You're talking about two. Fletcher and
Chappie.
What about
Fletch to go?
Well, how old's Fletch? He's 40. He's played 400 games. Is Fletcher part of Essendon in 2016 and 17 when they're looking to contend for finals again? I wouldn't have thought so. It's a tough decision. It's a tough conversation. But you've got to think about the club. You've got to think that I'm absolutely going with the incident on the plane for that.
What about at the trade table, Schwatter? They've got a couple of free agents. They got 19 blokes, I think, out of contract at the end of the year. Now, that to me suggests that Adrian Dodoro is lining ducks up, ready to get aggressive.
And Essendon haven't been an easy club to deal with in
recent years. Nightmare to deal with.
Yep, they have. But I think that you've got some players, you know, based on some of the names that I'm hearing, Tommy Bell Chambers might be on the table. Courtney Dempsey might be on the table. But perhaps the player that's garnering the most interest elsewhere is Brent Stanton. I think Essendon need to be aggressive at the table. They need to go there with some significant things to put in front of other clubs.
Do you hang in there with someone like Cooney?
That's a really good question, BT, because where I see Adam Cooney, Treaders, is Brent Harvey. A part player. He's got a knee. He's out. He's in and out of the team. It's an ongoing issue to manage that knee, and I think that he would be a player that would play an important role, but I don't see him, and I think he accepts this. He's not going to play 22 games.
Yeah, absolutely. And you take it further, if you're going to have senior players who are still on your list, and a greater example when I was playing was Brendan Lade.
Yep.
Phenomenal team person, phenomenal coach. Effectively, when the club had no money, he was being our ruck coach, even though he's competing with Brendan Lade for that spot, and they played kids at his expense. You've got to be an A-grade character if you're a senior player hanging on to the end and doing your thing. And we talked about Brent Harvey before, whether he was struggling to deal with the fact that he was a sub and wasn't doing what the coach wanted at certain times. So if they go forward to the Bombers, their blueprint has to look like, okay, we need some seniority around the place. You can't judge what they've been through. They've been through hell and back with all the off-field season. But they also need to look at Collingwood, and it might hurt. Because
that's a good point.
Against an arch rival and go, Nathan Buckley's decision to go in as coach of the Collingwood Football Club, people smashed it.
Yep.
He's been vindicated. He made tough calls. Yep. He moved on players who, call them Rat Pack or whatever. He got Swanee. He realised he's the best one. We'll get him around him.
We'll
take some other people. But I think what they have done, BT, is gone kids, kids, kids. Go to the draft. Go to the trade table. Acquire the best they can. And their kids are playing Thursday night didn't get the result. The last 3 weeks fallen just short against good teams. And they're playing their hearts out, and that's what young kids do. So yeah. I think that's the mantra.
Derek Hine at Collingwood has done a tremendous job with the list under the leadership of Nathan Buckley. The trouble with the Bombers, you're forgetting one thing, and that is that there's another ingredient to throw in there that's pretty explosive, and that is the fact that all of these supporters have supported James Hird through this period of unrest at the football club, and they've given him great support. And so then how do you turn around if you're James Hird or the club and tap a player on the shoulder and say, gee, you've given us great support through this, but guess what? As a reward for supporting the club in its darkest hours, we're going to get rid of you.
Yeah, no, look, I think what you've just said is relevant. I wish, you know, you wouldn't want to be in that position. And I think Duck alluded to this a few weeks back that, you know, he asked the question to James Hird, you know, do you feel compromised with regards to making decisions, more so at selection. But at the end of the year, you know, if I'm a player and I've put myself through hell for the last 3 years and I've stood resolute with my club and my coach and my teammates and supporters and all of those type of things, that's a fascinating situation. I'd hate to be the player, I'd hate to be the club, I'd hate to be the coach involved in that decision. But at the end of the day, BT, whether it's this year or next year, this football club, and whether it's James Hird, who was endorsed by Xavier Campbell on the Saturday rub yesterday in the lead-up to that game, he's still the best man for this football club moving forward. This club has to make list decisions, and if it's not at the end of this year, then it has to be next year.
In my time in footy, I've seen clubs make great list decisions with clarity and openness and keeping players informed. And I've seen some where they just throw them under a bus accidentally and didn't think through it. You need clarity.
Yeah.
You need clarity. And if it's senior players and they don't like it, that's fine. They don't have to like it. But if they respect and understand your decision and you can walk away and shake hands, that's the way to do it. We're also forgetting a big elephant in the room is what players are worth anything when we've still got an ongoing investigation?
And that's why...
That's part of
how
the
do you
problem.
Go to the trade table? Oh, geez, I like him from Essendon, but...
What sort of fact is that, well, Jay-Z?
It's massive. It's big. I mean, Paddy Wright has still got the deal done, a Stuart Camry to the Bulldogs for pick 26, but there is absolutely no doubt, it is unequivocal, confirmed, that clubs are showing a reluctance to deal with Essendon, to trade. Already, Essendon have begun sounding out other clubs, and they've said, look, we don't know. As you said, there's a big elephant in the room. What if they miss the next 2 years? So that discounts the player in a way. So Essendon are going to try and want to get 3 or 4 picks in the top 25 of a very shallow draft, but rival clubs are going to be pretty reluctant to give the gold when if they're getting a Courtney Dempsey who might be out for the next 6, 12, 18 months because of the WADA suspension.
Also brings into question the decision by the club 2 years ago to top up with experienced players from other clubs.
That was a choice they really didn't have. Mm. I think they were forced to go that way.
As a result of...
Yeah.
The drafts.
Yeah.
Three picks out of the top 40 over the 2 years. But what about the captaincy issue at the moment? Is Dyson Heppel has taken over for Joe Watson. He's out. He needs a shoulder reconstruction. Is this a point where the club...
He's had it.
Yeah. Is this a point where the club says, hey, Dyson, time to step up. You've got a 5-year deal. We know you're going to be a future the leader. Could he be the captain of the Essendon Football Club next year?
I reckon he could. And you know what? Job's the sort of guy that would say, for the benefit of the team and for the rebuilding, that this is a really good idea for me to step away from this and for Dyson to have it.
And the best thing for Job.
Yeah.
Release some of the burden. Because you see that. You see the weight of the world that he's been playing with.
Well, every captain goes through it. He's great going idea. Through even more because he's dealt with more stuff. But every captain steps away. Then I was lucky to do it my second last year. And I didn't think it was a burden. Tell you what, I made a proviso with my coach. I don't go to any other extra meetings or selection. I actually had a life again. It's bloody brilliant.
And I as the
you play footy that way.
I as the deputy vice captain at Collingwood. I was deputy DVC.
DDVC.
I think it was DDGVC.
Not really rating, is it?
So double VC. Yeah. Double DVC.
I really didn't give a stuff about anyone except myself. It was all about me. Me. We have sent out an SOS for every audio technician in Launceston to come to the Triple M box because we're having a few technical problems. Dan, our techo man, is just pulling his hair out. We just about had him sacked. And what do we find out the problem is? Wayne Swass sitting on the desk hitting the mute button.
Yep. Just about had enough of Jay-Z.
No trouble at all with the cords here.
Sorry, Jay.
Hey, guys, I wanted to talk about the public holiday situation. I know it's not a big deal now, but it will be a big deal come Grand Final Friday. The public holiday is on Grand Final Friday this year.
I like it.
What?
I like it.
Well, I just want you to think about that. I've been involved in the footy industry for 35, 40 years, Swatter, and it has a nice rhythm and a nice balance about it. Everyone knows where everything fits. Grand final week is a really important week to the whole football industry, the greater football industry. I'm talking about people come from interstate. You know, there's the grand final parade on Friday in the city. And while there's a lot of visitors to the city and it is school holidays, there are a lot of people that come out of the offices and support that, particularly on a wet day when there's not as many visitors. Those office people are always there and ready to support. There's functions. I've done a quick account of how many big functions in Melbourne on Grand Final Friday.
How many did you do?
I've been
to a lot.
How many
are there?
I've been
to a lot. How many are there during the week?
There are over 100 functions
Brian's
in
got
Melbourne
47.
On Grand 50. Final Friday. Most of those people are looking to transfer their lunches, dinners, breakfasts to another day in the week. And they can't get those days because they're already full with other functions. So it's caused enormous problems. And I'm just wondering why this was a promise from the Labor government when they got in that they'd do it. And to their credit, they've done it. Good on them. It's costing a lot of money. But I'm saying why? Why Friday? Why not Monday? Why at all? To explain why they've done this, the Sports Minister of Victoria is on the line, John Erin, and we welcome John to the program. John, appreciate your time.
No worries, Brian, Wayne, Warren, Jay, how you going, boys?
Yep, we're all here. And I just start, John, and you probably heard that brief lead in there. Other than being a promise by the Andrews government, why are we changing something that doesn't need to be changed?
Well, BT, as you know, we're the sporting capital of the world and we're the most livable city in the world, and that doesn't come by accident. Obviously, we work very hard at it, all of us collectively. And when you think about working hard, we don't get many breaks after June. So the second half of the year, there's hardly any public holidays. And when you compare that to other industrialised nations, like when you look at some of the countries, like India has 21 days, Philippines has 18 days, China has 17 days, Sweden and Lithuania have 15 days, and Australia has 10 public holidays. And you know what? Like, family time's very important. And
but, John, it's not
can
so
I
much...
Just ask
no, no, I just think you're heading off in a direction that doesn't need to head off. This is about the football industry. Yep. This is about this particular Friday. I'm not disagreeing that the holiday shouldn't be there somewhere. I agree with you, and I think it's great. But I think Grand Final Friday is not the time to have a public holiday.
Well, I mean, that's an election promise that we made going into the elections last year, and obviously we're committing to that. There's no issue of that. But, you know, like, football is our iconic game. And I know you're saying that's not the issue in relation to the public holiday. But, you know, we want to identify our own cultural game, and that's football. And it's unique. It's a unique code to Victoria. And we're the sporting capital of the world. And we decided this. We made a policy issue of it, obviously, leading up to the election. And guess what? We won. And people voted, for the government that proposed this proposal. Policy and that's what we're doing, and it's important to understand that, you know, when you think about, you know, at school holidays, it's family time, if people can prepare for it. Public holidays create such a positive vibe right throughout Victoria, where families can actually organise a day when they know
no one in the city. There'll be no one in the city that day, John.
Oh no, well that's not correct. I want to totally disagree with that. There'll be, you know, more than 100,000 people will attend that Grand Final Friday. And we know, depending on who's playing in the grand final, there'll be a lot of interstate visitors that will come to see their teams and they'll stay the long weekend.
John, do you regret the promise?
Sorry?
Do you regret making the promise?
Not at all. We don't regret it at all. We know that Victorians work very hard. And this is about making sure that we get family time, it's quality time with family and friends, and that's what public holidays do. If we're saying the public holidays aren't useful, I think we're kidding ourselves.
No,
of course they're useful.
No, your point was that you made that you're going to add fun and enjoyment, but the pre-grand final is a fun, enjoyment time. Wouldn't you be better off putting that somewhere else so you get the double hit and only lose the one day?
No, because we want to make a weekend of it. We want to make sure...
It's already a weekend, John.
It's not a long weekend.
No, but you can put the holiday. Weekend. You can put the holiday on the Monday. It's already the greatest weekend in Victoria, other than the Spring Carnival.
Well, we disagree. I mean, we disagree in the sense that we think that Friday is the appropriate day. We didn't want to shift that Friday because it's traditionally that's when the grand final parade is on. So we want to ensure that we maximise on that opportunity depending on who's in the grand final. And if people want to come and stay and they want to stay the long weekend, they can. And if they wanted to, you know, if we shifted it to the Monday, I don't necessarily think that people would actually stay the Monday. And that's the problem. And you know, we want to maximise in regional Victoria as well. This is going to be a huge boost to the economy. As you know, tourism and major events combined provide lots of income for the hospitality industry. And we know, for example, with even the ICC Cricket World Cup, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investment into hospitality. And
what do you say to all of those events on Friday, of which I'm part of, and I know many of them, and I can give you examples if you want, are now looking to move out of that Friday slot because their whole function is built around corporate and business Melbourne supporting those functions. Those guys aren't at work and they won't leave at lunchtime, go and do their lunch thing and go back to work. What do you say to them?
Well, what I say is that it's entirely an operational matter. If people want to shift how they conduct their business in the way that they do, well, it's entirely up to them. We've done this on the basis of some of the costings that we've done in relation to the estimated value that it would bring in terms of the economic activity, and it's around about $400 million. And for regional Victoria particularly, expenditure in regional Victoria will go up by $50 million. Now, we've done some firm economic data on this, and we're expecting that that there'll be a huge boost in relation to that particular day, having it on the Friday. And this is what it's about. It's not just about Melbourne, and, of course, it's about regional Victoria.
What about the cost of businesses having to open with public holiday wages because of that? Well, that would go through the roof.
Let's not forget, BT, that those people that get paid the extra actually are giving up their public holiday, and they're entitled to, obviously, have a bit of a severance pay in relation to giving up a public holiday. And it's about wealth distribution as well. Don't you think those people that actually earn that extra money are going to spend it back into the industry? And that's what normally happens. All of those people that work in the hospitality industry, guess what? They get an income, they get an added boost because of the public holiday, and they spend it back into the industry. And that's what it's all about. And you don't want to cut off your nose to spite your face. If you cut back wages and conditions of people, then they're going to spend less into the industry. And that's what, and this is what a lot of people need to understand. It's about spreading some of that wealth with the workers. And if they're going to give up their public holiday, let's be fair about it, they're entitled to be paid a little bit more. And all of these people will spend it back into the industry. It's a well-known fact. You know, all those people go out and spend it on the hospitality industry themselves. So it goes back into the industry.
Appreciate your time, John. Thank you very much for coming on to Triple M Football. The Victorian Sports Minister, John Aaron, there. And I think we agree to disagree. He did not, in that 5 or 6 minute interview, sell me one positive message about why they have changed the day. There is no reason to make a public holiday on Grand Final Friday and upset the equilibrium or the balance or the rhythm of what that day has built.
Absolutely silly idea. Spot on, BT. I've covered the last 5 or 6 Grand Final parades on a Friday, and the atmosphere in the city as the players go through and you're chasing them for
just a shop owner here, bottle of milk down at Torquay and Lawn, won't open for lunch on the public holiday Grand Final weekend. And we are a tourist destination. They will not open because of the wages thing that you just
if it ain't
about.
Broke, don't fix it. He missed the point on the wages stuff. My point was the business owners, not the others.
The equilibrium and the rhythm that Brian's talking about is his pockets are bulging by Friday.
No.
Not much room left in the
pockets. No, because those functions will be elsewhere, and they're all checks anyway. they are, and don't tell me any different. Jack Redpath is on the line. The Bulldogs guys yesterday were absolutely outstanding. A 10-goal last quarter. Jack Redpath kicked 3 goals, kicked important goals in that last quarter as well. Were they all in the last quarter, Jay-Z?
No.
Kicked 3 for the game, but did kick a nice goal in the last quarter as well. Jack, appreciate your time on Triple M Football. And the Dogs are just progressing very, very nicely. You've won 3 in a row and playing great team footy at the moment.
Yeah, we are. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been obviously to come in last week and to get a chance to beat Carlton myself, and then this week. But the boys have been
since the bye, we've come a long way, I think. So it's starting to sort of come together and look good.
Hey, Jack, well done on your own performance. But for three quarters, I called the game. Gold Coast seemed to have the game comfortably under control, led by 26 points. Obviously, as BT said, you kicked 10 goals in that final term to two. What was the main message from Lukey Beveridge at three-quarter time to get the team playing the way that you know you're capable of?
It was just about us, because it even felt like that out there. It seemed like they were just smothering us. So it was sort of just about us to sort of really get that spirit going, and we just needed everyone to really sort of knuckle down, and we knew we could do it. It was never out of reach, so it was just awesome. I think because even about 10-minute mark, I think Hall kicked another goal, and it was started to get a little bit more sort of away from reach, and then we started to pile them on, which was nice.
Yeah, Jack, I didn't get to see the game. It's Warren Treadray here. I was in Perth watching the Adelaide West Coast game, but following it on Twitter, you look gone, you come back. About a month ago, you came to Adelaide and you struggled a little. You looked tired. You looked like you needed a break. Have you done anything in particular with the young bodies? Because your pressure dropped off, but now it's back up again, as good as it's been all year.
Yeah, I suppose I think that was the game just before the bye. So I suppose we might have sort of been waiting for that bye a little bit. And as you said, the pressure did drop off. But yeah, that's just been sort of just about sort of focusing on us as a group and just sort of really getting that spirit up and just really sort of, in the last quarter, everyone was really positive, and it sort of just showed that, you know, when everyone sort of knuckles down and everyone sticks really positive, that you can turn anything around.
Jack, it's Shay Clark from the Herald Sun here. You're a big boy and you've had two knee reconstructions, and you've been made to work very hard for your chance picked up in the 2012 rookie draft. How is the knee going in terms of the twisting and the turning on the lead and being mobile? You were sensational last night. How do you cope with that sort of stuff and the pressure that is on your knee?
At the moment I feel the best I ever have. I suppose for the first, I always found after sort of each reco, it didn't sort of feel fully right for probably a year to sort of after you come back. So now at this point now, I haven't had a sort of an injury on my knees for, you know, 3 or 4 years now. So they're feeling sort of the best I ever have. I wouldn't even notice. I never have any pain or anything. So it's lucky I've got a good surgeon.
And you're an ex-chippy mate. Do you still hang out with your chippy mates? Do you pop down on their smoko breaks and that sort of stuff? Do you still catch up with those guys?
I don't get down to any smoko breaks, but I went back over the bye week and sort of give Mum a bit of a hand around the house of stuff she needed done, and I give a mate a hand, but it was a bit harsh on the back, so I thought I'd better give it a miss for the rest of the year.
What would the club dietitian say about those smoko breaks and what gets consumed in that time?
Yeah, I haven't told them about too much the way I used to eat, but nah, I'll stick away from the pies and just stick on the salad for now.
We know Shane Mumford once ate, what was it, 16 sausages in a row. You got any particular some meat pie records or anything like that, Jack? You want to?
My biggest weakness is lollies and chocolate, so I try and steer away from that. But I'm not a big pie or sandwich man. But yeah, it's more the sweets that get me.
Hey, just Jack, I thought the game of Liam Picken yesterday was outstanding, and I've only seen him a couple of times. He's small in stature, but Caleb Daniel also played a great game.
Yeah, I think Pico's had an amazing year. I think the last year he sort of played that role as he's always sort of playing on someone and trying to stop someone. I think this year just give him that freedom, and he's just playing amazingly. You know, he signed another contract with the club for two more years, and then you got Caleb, who played his first game last week, and I looked up at I think he'd been on the ground for about 8 minutes. I looked up and he'd had 8 touches already, and I think I'd had about 5 myself, so... But yeah, he was good again yesterday, Caleb. He's too small. The blokes can't even touch him.
What about your mate in the forward line, Jake Stringer? He kicked that that magical snap goal, which got you right back in it. Jack, we heard throughout the pre-season that he was just absolutely tearing it up, making other blokes look silly. Can you tell us what you remember of Jake Stringer's pre-season? Because apparently that's when he turned an unbelievable corner.
Yeah, he just, it's the last, when he first got there, I suppose, he was probably still recovering, I suppose he'd had that broken leg, and I think that they worked a lot on his leg strength and stuff. And then during the preseason, yeah, like, as you said, he was just pushing blokes out of the way and just grabbing the ball, and no one can touch him. Like, he's got the sidestep, he can kick goals from 50. And I think the last couple of weeks we've seen that even if blokes can hold him down for a half, I think he just explodes and he can do anything. Sort of, I just stand there. I love playing with him, because that snappy kick last night, it's just awesome to be out there. Playing alongside him.
You talked about loving to play with him. What about loving to play for him? And I'm talking your coach, Luke Beveridge. He just looks like he's giving kids a go and you're repaying him. What's he done for you that's just helped your game flourish?
Yeah, Bevo just at the start, he sort of just come in and
I'm one that needs to sort of just, I just like to play the game and sort of, you know, treat it as any game of footy and just really trying to enjoy it. And I think he does that well. He wants blokes to play multiple roles, and he's just easy to talk to. I find you can go into his office whenever and talk to him about anything, you know, just general stuff like, you know, back home about your family or, you know, any questions about football. So I reckon that's a real strength of his and even our coaching group. As you know, I've got Daniel Giancarecusa as my forwards coach, and I've got a great relationship with him, so he's been another massive help for my footy this year.
Well, Jack, you're rolling along beautifully. For the season last year, the Dogs won 7 games. You've now notched up number 9. You take on the Cats at Simmons Stadium next week. So finals are in the distance. If you're good enough, keep up the good work. Thanks for joining us, and well done yesterday.
Not a problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Let's head downstairs. Thanks to Bob Jane T-Marts, the tyre and wheel specialist, Brian Taylor, with the coach of the Fremantle Dockers, Ross Lyon. Bristle?
Snaggles.
Yes, we are here, Wayne. I'm just having a private conversation. Sorry about that. Ross Lyon has joined us, coach of the Fremantle Dockers, as you mentioned. Ross, welcome. I want to ask you about the ground conditions. You get here, it's a huge ground. There's a wind. There's a particular way to play it. Have you educated the players on how to do that?
Trying to educate myself. Checked in with the groundsman who filled us in. Not a typical breeze. Normally comes from the other side of the ground blowing. So he said, this with that cold front that's come in. I said, why isn't it raining? He goes, well, we're in the epicentre. It's all going out. So the southerly blowing it across, it's a unique breeze. So that's probably a good thing that it's not typical for Hawthorn. But the ground's magnificent. Breeze isn't too strong and a little bit cool. But, yeah, really pleasing.
Mzungu is playing some really good football, from what I understand, in the Waffle. He's really had to battle for his opportunity here. Came in, went out the other week, back in again today on the back of a late change with Tabiner out. He's really had to earn his spot.
Yeah, he has. I think he's only been the sub once. And first 3 years he played every week. So it's been good for us that he's not been able to force his way in. But he's shown great character and we've been keen to give him an opportunity. He'll run through the wing and half back a fair bit today. If you look at Hawthorn, you really identify the run of Hill and Smith and their bounce out of the back line is significant for them because they've got some great footballers like Hyde and Mitchell, but Smith and Hill are elite long runners and break the line, so we need some good runners to go with those guys.
Tell us why the game's changed. And I'm speaking generically about the whole game and the look of the game. All of a sudden, you know, scoring a little bit more, some different setups on the ground, and it just looks different. 5 years ago, we were all complaining about, you know, stoppage football and it looked ugly. All of a sudden, it's different again.
Yeah, it is, and it's sort of... Look, we started the first 8-9 rounds. We were the least stoppages in the competition, which probably is contrary to what people thought. We don't... But then the last 4 weeks, like last week was 140 stoppages, which we didn't enjoy, but it was a wet, tough day. So, look, Hawthorn, everyone used to play plus one, which is really just when a forward go up, you'd let him go and you just... The pressure's good up the ground. They just have to kick it to your spare and you sort of counterpunch. But Hawthorn were one of the first to keep their six in front of the ball and just have a different midfield setup. So they make you to defend and they're able to go into equal numbers, even under pressure. So they were probably the first shift, which has opened the game up. If you hold your forwards, there's less congestion around the midfield. And they don't tend to play a drop-off defender unless you get too greedy and you send too many up. So, you know, they're Birchall and Burgoyne. They'll attack you if you bring them up the stoppages, which is... And they tend to position in front a little bit, so... They've got a break on you if you turn it over. So there's some of the slight changes.
One loss for the year, and I noticed going through some stats yesterday, just one debutant for the year. Does that mean that you're playing really good football, you're settled, you've got the people you want, and there's no need to expose any others at this stage because you've got... I'm not sure how deep it is. How deep do you go?
Yeah, look, we've got a couple of beauties, we reckon, below, which is Connor Blakely. And he would have played at a... No doubt, he would have played at a club that had a different development cycle. Like Hawthorn, they take longer to come through. So, and Lockie Weller, we're thrilled with. He's got the speed we really need. We'd like to see them play in the second half of the year. But when you're fighting for a top four spot, like Tendai Mzungu hasn't been getting in. And we've had a good run with injuries except down back. So we're keen to play them. But what we've found, Lockie Neal, Sutcliffe, Tommy Sheridan's in... those sort of guys, Spurs come in. When they come in, they tend to stay in, and that's what we've liked from a couple of years. And Alex Pearce has been super. But if Johnson was available, Johnson would be playing. So sometimes it's about opportunity. But when they come in, they come in with a really good grounding and they can stand up.
Warren Treadray, Wayne Swass and Jake Clark upstairs. Got a couple of questions for Ross, guys.
Yeah, Ross, Warren Treadray here, mate. I want to get your take on a former teammate of mine, Daniel Pearce. He left Port Adelaide, offensively unbelievable, quick, uses the ball well, really added something to your mix. But there was a knock on him, the defensive side, his game. You've improved him so much in your program. What's the thing you've spent the most of the time working? Because we're seeing career best form.
Well, we did do really good due diligence on Daniel in that we checked in with his former teammates and Cornsy and those boys, and they just said he was an immaculate trainer and never missed and presented. So we're thrilled with that. And I've been able to forge a good relationship with him where he trusts what we ask him to do, that he'll get rewarded and he'll get played. So. And there's also, it's more that the team drives it. Like if Fife's holding you accountable for chasing and getting goals side, you're going to tend to do it more so than it comes from me. So I found him a really strong character who is tougher than I thought. You know, I thought he was a bit more outside runner, but he'll stand his ground and stick some big tackles. So he's been super for us. He's been a steal, really. So it's been him that's wanted to grow. When he came in, I think Port went through in a really elite period, then they fell off and lost its way a little bit, and he come in, he had to adapt to the intensity of training, and he did that, he hung in and it turned for him, and he's been a really strong contributor.
He certainly has been, Ross. It's Jay Clark here from the Herald Sun. I want to ask you about Luke McFarlane. We talk in Melbourne and Victoria about Matthew Scarlett a lot as being the all-time defender really of the past 20 years, and you've coached Max Hudgeton, but is Luke McFarlane as good a key defender that you've coached or seen in the game?
Oh, look, he's a magnificent defender. His closing speed and his ability to win one-on-one. I think where Scarlett gets them all is he's with the ball in hand, he was like a brilliant mid. His ability to distribute the ball and make decisions, I think that's what separated Scarlett from, you know, and Stephen Silvani's a great mate of mine. He'll think he's a great kick, but I think if, you know, Luke sits in that really great defender, but Scarlett, you know, was an elite distributor. So it's not Luke's absolute strength, it's adequate, but if that was the area of the game, he'd say that's where I'd take to improve.
Ross, he's had a great season. This time last year, he looked shot.
Yeah, he did.
Did you have to back him in, or was he out of contract, or, you know?
I thought he'd retire. In my head, I thought he was done. And but he came to me and said, I want to keep going. I said, well, that surprises me. Look, which is a good sign that for an older guy who's got a family and got plenty going on off field, it was a great sign that he wanted to go on. So it was all driven by Luke. I had my head around there, he was going. So we've managed him better. He's more strength into his calf. And we've made some good calls on him this year. It's more Monday to Friday, if anything, where we just really look after him. So it was all driven by Luke. But with what happened to Silvani and Dawson and Johnson, we're lucky he went on, really.
Better let you go, Ross. Just noticed Pav just lining up down there. Having a bit of trouble with the wind. He's allowing about 5 metres to the right-hand side. It's a bit too much. You better get down there and tell him. Have a look at the way the Hawks handle it as well. Good luck today.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
A bit of a news wrap right now, Jay-Z. This is your wheelhouse.
Well, there's big news developing at Collingwood, fellas, because Nathan Buckley and Scott Pendlebury, the captain and coach, are both out of contract at the end of next year. And what the Pies want to do is stitch them both up, recontract them, before they go into next season under the guillotine. So this week, Derek Hine met with Scott Pendlebury and basically talked him through the list, gave him all the details.
At Pendlebury's insistence? Or
I think it was a bit of a mutual thing. I think they got a really good relationship. Sat down and and Derek Hine just took him through the absolute nitty-gritty ins and outs of when they're going to be peaking, how the young boys are coming along, etc.
Dangerous thing to do if he decides to leave, which he never would.
No, just a bit of reassurance. Now, the context of this is Pendlebury's a free agent next year, and we see what's happening with Dangerfield at the moment. We all expect him to go to Geelong at the end of next year. What kind of salary could Scott Pendlebury attract on the free market if you wanted to? It would be the biggest. It'd be 1.5 plus. But clearly the Pies don't want that, and he wants to stay because he's doing a magnificent job as captain. So 1.5. I think what we'll see...
He's in the top half dozen of salary earners in the AFL, shouldn't he be?
Yeah, it'd be nearly $1 million a year, or he deserve it. Deservedly.
What's he playing for?
He played his best game. He's played 205 games. He played his best game, Nathan Buckley thinks, a couple of weeks ago.
Playing for a payday? Or playing for a premiership?
Yeah, which one?
You don't need 1.5 playing for a premiership. No.
Yep.
He's going nowhere.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So stay tuned for big news on that front. Interesting that he has sat down with Derek Hine, the list chief. The Friday night lineup, boys, has caused a bit of a kerfuffle over the past couple of weeks because Carlton this year was given six Friday night time slots. BT, now you're our broadcasting man. James Brayshaw came out very strong yesterday and said it was a monumental stuffer, basically, that the league had given Carlton the free kick. They finished 13th last year, didn't deserve the six Friday night spots. What needs to happen next year? Do we go on how big the club is, how big the attendance figures could be, or do we go on performance from the year before?
A little bit of each. A little bit of each. Those Friday night games need to remain as big crowd drawers, as well as big ratings pullers, as well as teams that can compete. It's a combination of those three ingredients. I know that's a lot to absorb, but I'm staggered that Carlton were delivered the Friday night games that they were this year on the basis of finishing 13th last year. And even looking at the list, thinking, gee, if I'd been asked my opinion last year, and many others would have said, I'm not sure they're going to climb up the ladder. They might stay where they are or they might go down, but I didn't think they were going to climb. And I just can't believe on the basis of that. However, I don't want to see clubs playing on a Friday night that aren't big drawers. And we go to the MCG and there's 25,000 people sitting there. Mm-hmm. That is no good for the brand of Friday night football. And so there is the thinking from the AFL, probably the positioning of Carlton. Still too many, I agree, but crowd's a factor.
What's the priority? Is it crowd? Quality of the game?
Well, I don't think the AFL knows. I think that's what they're wrestling with at
JB
the moment.
JB was insinuating that, well, he was actually saying that, that they were setting themselves up for the next broadcasting deal and trying to get big clubs to play on Friday night,
get
the ratings up, and then be able to go to potential broadcasters and say, this is going to cost you a little bit more because we know that the ratings are doing this, this, and this. You know, and that's what he was saying. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I want to see quality, big drawing crowds. We've been down the path. A couple of years ago, went down the path of playing the lesser teams.
Western Bulldogs.
On a Friday night, and they do not get it done. And they devalue the Friday night slot for the potential sale by the AFL to broadcasters.
You're making at best guesses based on form lines at the end of one season, going into a new season, and it probably won't happen. But I do like the idea of a rolling six-week block. It gives the broadcasters an ability to make some decisions and change the fixturing 6 weeks out. It used to be involved in the game, but it's no longer. What's the double Friday night still part
on the agenda?
The mix?
Yeah, on the agenda. So what you'd have a 6 o'clock game in Adelaide or something like that, and then you have a 9 o'clock game in Perth, which is 7 o'clock in WA.
The other thing that's always staggered me in the negotiations of these fixtures on an annual basis, and even a broadcast 5 year basis, doing the deal is that, to my knowledge, the AFL, when they do the fixture, and I could be wrong, Jay, and you could correct me if any of you guys have been involved, I don't know of anyone that is regarded as an expert in the game, as a former player or former coach or someone that knows the game well, that goes in and briefs the AFL and says, I think this team's going that way, I think this team's going sideways, and I think this team's going down. Mm. That's what I think.
Lee Matthews, for example.
Yeah, Lee Matthews, for example. Get him in there and do that. So I don't know that happens with the networks, and I don't know that it happens with the AFL. I am actually staggered by it.
So who decides that? Is it Simon Lethlon at the AFL? Do the broadcasters have any say?
I think Simon puts the fixture in front, and the broadcasters say yay or nay to a couple, and a couple get through and a couple don't get through.
Mm. Well, it's fair to say that this year's hasn't worked. There's been a lot of one-sided games. Adam Treloar, a bit more contract news. Richmond and North Melbourne both offered six-year deals. We spoke to Brad Scott before for Adam Treloar. He's about 22, 23, blistering midfielder. So along with Collingwood, we've got a five-year deal on the table, maybe about $700,000. It's going to be a battle for Adam Treloar.
Tell me something I don't know, Swatter. I want to go first.
Righto.
I saw someone in this box modelling.
What?
A model. Now, Treaders hasn't got a lot of hair.
I've got none.
I'm a little
out.
Robust
yep.
in my appearance.
Can only be one bloke.
Jay-Z's a little
plumpish.
Little short.
Plump.
There's only one other guy
that
could be doing the modelling, Swatter. I have seen you modelling cycling gear.
What?
Oh, like no. There's no tomorrow. You've become a male model. Is that right? Am I speaking the truth?
No.
Are we talking Instagram?
No. Are we talking...
No.
We are.
Jay-Z, what do you got?
It's out there.
Chest out style. Hey, we know Essendon, as you said before, are in the midst of a bit of a list overhaul. At the end of the year, they're going to be very proactive at the trade table. I think their football department is also going to have a bit of a restructure. And I'm not sure whether Neil Craig, who's head of the football department at the moment, will be there or not. Perhaps he won't be there at Essendon alongside James Hurd next year, Neil Craig. So it'll be very interesting to see where his footballing future lies.
Very good. The new boy, the debutant, the man in the green vest, Tredders, what have you got?
Thought I'd keep it local, boys. There's an unhealthy infatuation with monkeys when they come to town.
What do you mean? What?
Teams, when they come to town, they stay at the hotel normally, and there's a, down the road, there's Monkey Island Walk. So yeah, what you'll find...
Launceston.
Yeah, Launceston. Boys go for their morning walk and stretch, the interstate teams. They stuff their pockets full of fruit, and they cause the biggest monkey fight down this local park you'll ever see in your life. Muffins, burgers, so anything that goes.
Not with monkeys, they're humans.
They're actually monkey monkeys.
Oh, I thought...
Very good. Schwatter, you said before you've got an absolute ripper today, so what are you thinking?
Board the plane and fortunate enough to sit in the exit aisle. A little bit of leg room. And when the people come up, there's a lady there. She was delivering her, you know, safety message.
Personal.
Person on the other side of the aisle had his phone out, or she had her phone out. And the lady said, excuse me, you've got to turn the phone off. No, I won't. You need to look at me while I deliver the presentation. No, I can't. I can listen and watch what I'm doing. It got to the point where she threatened this person that I'm talking about, if you don't turn that off, I will move you to another seat. No, you won't. Anyway, the presentation was eventually done. This person that I'm referring to wrote a two-page complaint, got a witness to sign a stat deck, and I followed this same person off the plane, and he gave the two-page complaint to the top stewardess and said, file it, I want an official apology.
Who is this flop?
Is this our leader?
It is our great leader. He spent an hour writing a two-page complaint, got the witness statement and delivered it and said, take that to the top.
Now, Swatter, that was a very personal...
Explain yourself. What happened?
Well,
two alpha people.
We were sitting in the exit row. She was giving us the exit row verbal diarrhea.
This is not denial, by the way.
Okay, now that's
she
okay.
She stared him down.
So she wasn't doing any signals. It was all verbal.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at my phone, but not intently interested in what was on my phone, just staring at it.
Or her.
She said, look at me. I said, mate, do you realise, you know...
Who I am?
What I'm I'd be
Brad.
Looking at? And so I refused to look at her. And I said, no, I can listen to you. Don't have to look at you. And she said, I'm going to get you removed from this seat. And I said, no, you're not. I said, I don't have to look at you. There's no rule in your plane operations manual that says that I have to look at you when you're delivering the exit row procedure.
Because you read it.
And she was filthy, and I've never met a more rude person in my life. I've filed an official complaint. Yes, I have. And this was it was on Jetstar. And I try not to fly Jetstar.
Oh, yeah.
And this has confirmed my opinion of them.
BT, how are we getting home?
And the finisher was, as she's finished it, and delivered it to our side, she's leant back over just within earshot and she said quietly to this person, you're lucky I didn't rescind you and send you up the back. Didn't go down particularly well.
Anyway,
but, we
so
made it.
Not only did I write a letter of complaint, I got those
you got all the honeymooners to witness it.
There was a pair
honeymooners who were enamoured with themselves on a 10 o'clock
flight. It was their first time on the plane, these two. A little bit rough around the edges, intent on joining the Mile High Club. And I'm sitting there and I'm saying, hello, hello. And there's a little bit of, they were somehow strangling each other with legs, arms and neck to the point of, that didn't worry the lady delivering the message that they could do that. On the mounting of each other, but not, the fact that I wasn't looking was not good enough.
Shut up! The footies on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.